Are we recording?
This is Pete Seeger inviting you this Father's Day weekend to celebrate on the shores of the Hudson River with music, dance, storytelling, crafts, and so much more. It's Clearwater's Great Hudson River Revival, a music and environmental festival. Hope to see you there. Clearwater's Music and Environmental Festival,
here on WBAI.
I'm Bjorn from ABBA, and this is WBAI, listener-supported non-commercial radio in New York.
This is Pete Seeger inviting you this Father's Day weekend to celebrate on the shores of the Hudson River with music, dance, storytelling, crafts, and so much more. It's Clearwater's Great Hudson River Revival, a music and environmental festival. Hope to see you there. Clearwater's Music and Environmental Festival,
here on WBAI.
And you're listening to radio station WBAI in New York. The time is 6:59, and we can't get anything else to work around here, so why don't we just start off the hook a little bit early tonight. Time now for another exciting edition of Off the Hook. Even that's not going to work. Okay, well, it's going to be one of those nights, I see, where we have all kinds of technical problems. That actually, you know, by the way, in case you think the CD is dirty, that's a new CD. We re-recorded it because the last one was giving us trouble. And, well, now it seems it's the machine that's giving us problems, not the actual theme. The theme usually sounds better than this. Believe it or not. Okay, enough about that. This is Emmanuel Goldstein. Off the Hook is on the air, and we have a studio filled with people tonight. For some reason, I don't know why there's so many people here. I don't know. And Bernie down there in Philadelphia. Bernie, you with us?
Good evening.
How you doing?
Pretty good. How are you?
Hectic. I guess that's the right word to use, because it's been a heck of a week as far as just all these events happening and preparation for future events and things like that. But I guess the big news that we're going to start off with involves a guest to our studio from a foreign country. Fred from Montreal is here. And Fred actually brought something down to New York that has been bringing people in the city all kinds of joy over the last about a week or so. Fred, you want to describe what it is that the people of New York may have seen for the first time in their lives because of you?
Well, it's a tiny little thing called a smart car.
So the smart car is in Manhattan right now as we speak.
That's right.
And people are coming up to it. People are coming up to it, pointing to it.
It never stops. You can't park somewhere without someone coming to the car in less than 15 seconds.
It's something like I've never experienced before. And I've been a part of, a bunch of weird events. But just driving down the street in this little two-seater car from Europe, you get all kinds of smiles and waves and thumbs up, people taking pictures, just having it parked on the street. people will come by and marvel at it. In fact, if you want to see it, it's parked right outside the station right now, one block up, actually. And we're going to be driving it around the East Village a little later tonight. So, you know, if you have nothing else to do, stand by the side of the street, and I'm sure you'll see it go whizzing by at some point. I think people are surprised to see just how much like a regular car it is. It doesn't go, you know, slow, or it doesn't have no power. It's really a lot of fun.
It drives great. It's got a Mercedes-Benz motor in there, so it, you know, it handles the road very well.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it does. And it's spacey on the inside. I don't want this to sound like a car commercial, but it's just, this is sort of the pinnacle of something that we've been talking about now for a couple of years, getting these things into this country. And, boy, there's one in this country right now. In fact, I know there are a few, but at least in the city there is one right now. And it's just the reaction that it's been getting from people tells me that, boy, this would do good if they were smart enough, no pun intended, to actually market the thing here.
It's very surprising to see how people react to this car. I was driving down the 87, and people actually slow down and start waving, giving thumbs up, and smiling. And if you stop the car, it's like you get bombarded with questions all the time.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. I have a question.
Yeah, go ahead, Bernie.
My question is, it seems like such a good idea, and I'm sure the smart car company hasn't not thought of bringing it to the U.S., but I'm wondering if there's any behind-the-scenes, I'm not being a conspiracy theorist or whatever, but I'm wondering if there's any behind-the-scenes pressure from the current automotive manufacturers in the U.S., like GM, which is on its deathbed, pressuring the EPA, whoever has to approve this vehicle for sale in the U.S., to sort of keep putting the application at the bottom of the pile.
Well, I know one of the explanations we give to people when they ask why isn't this thing in this country, we say it doesn't use enough gas. Some people seem to accept that as a logical reason, but I don't know. I think Smart and Mercedes could be doing a lot more to bring this thing into this country.
I remember talking to a dealer in Canada, a Smart dealer, and they said that they were thinking of bringing the not the small one, but the 4.4 and the SUV 4.more to the U.S.
Well, no, they canceled the SUV version.
Did they?
Yeah, that was a stupid idea.
Yeah.
It's called the 4.more. And, you know, the whole point of this really neat-looking car is that it's tiny. So if you make it the same size as a normal car, it loses everything that makes it unique.
But I found it amusing that they didn't think that a small car could do well. And, you know, just walking down the street anywhere, some of these cars that I see just scare me. Like, I don't want to be anywhere near them because they're gigantic. And I don't understand it because,
you know, the thing is, driving around, we've been driving around on highways and throughout the whole tri-state area, you would think that big cars would intimidate you in this little tiny thing. But, I don't know, maybe I'm crazy, but have they intimidated you, Fred?
Not at all. Actually, the car handles the road very well. You can pass mm-hmm. cars pretty much easily. And you're a little higher up than most cars,
yeah.
Which gives you like a kind of confidence in the tiny little thing. And
psychological.
You actually feel like you're in a real car. It's really small on the outside, but the way they managed to design it, it's extremely spacey inside.
Yeah.
You actually forget you're in a tiny little car.
Mm-hmm. And just today on the way down here, I thought I was going to get hit by some idiot behind me who was getting really, really close. He was turning, and, you know, you can sort of sense when this guy is too close and I'm about to feel an impact. But I forgot how little space there was behind me. And he basically was just able to easily go right past me without coming anywhere near me. So, yeah, it takes a little bit of getting used to. And I'm afraid when I drive a regular car again, I might, undercompensate for those kinds of things. So, yeah, it's really cool. It's been an amazing last couple of days just showing this thing off. And I guess we just got to figure out now how we can actually change the minds of people who are in charge of motor vehicles in this country. And conserve a whole lot of fuel in the process.
I actually think the reason they don't have it in the U.S. might be because of the safety reasons.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, when you're driving around, everybody's staring at it, and drivers are, you know, driving really dangerously around the smart car.
Yeah, there's a lot of pointing and staring. We've seen people swerve as they pass us, and they're turning around to get a better look. Pedestrians go running out into traffic, screaming and yelling to see the thing closer. So, yeah, it can be dangerous, but not because of the car itself, you know. People just have to get used to it, and I guess the only way to do that is to keep driving around. We were driving around Times Square, and, boy, did that cause a commotion. Even the cops were coming up wanting to know when they could get one, you know.
Taxi drivers kept rolling down the windows asking, you know, what kind of mileage does this get?
Yeah.
You know, you know something is probably wrong if the cops want one.
Well, I don't know if they wanted one or they just wanted to know when they're going to be around in the country. You know, in Lisbon, in Portugal, they actually do use these as police cars. They actually do.
So they must run red lights real well or something.
Well, I ran one by accident.
Criminal.
Yeah, I'm sorry. But I don't know. They can go pretty they can accelerate fast. They can hold their own. If you want to see what they look like, go to www.smart.com. If you have ideas as to how we can use some of this positive feedback and actually replace the SUVs with these things. Yeah, you can't bring your family of eight with the 55-gallon drum of mayonnaise that you buy at Price Club into this thing. That's true, but there is space for baggage. There is space for, you know, various things. If you just want to get around town, this is a good thing.
If you just want to get around this town, of course, you'd do better with a bicycle. But
I wouldn't necessarily say that. I've seen what some bicycles have been doing lately, but it's the closest thing to a bicycle without being on a bicycle, let's put it that way.
Might be harder to park a bicycle in the city.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Okay, what else is been happening? I see Lynn is here.
Yes.
What brings you by?
I just was in town and thought I'd stop by.
You came for the smart car, didn't you?
Yeah, well, you told me there was a surprise. So
well,
and I actually
a took
a picture of it out front before I even knew that was what the surprise was.
That's what people are doing. They're walking outside on Wall Street. They're flocking to the car. They're taking pictures of it. It's that unusual. And I've seen all kinds of things come out. I've seen, you know, the new VW Beetle and the PT Cruiser and the Mini. And you know, people like those cars, but nothing like this.
Have you seen any of the ones that were all stripped down in Europe? Where they have like the mesh doors on them and all kinds of, they're taking the doors and the fenders and all this other stuff off. I have a picture of one from Switzerland or Germany, I think, where somebody had just totally modified the whole car and taken, like, I don't know, half the body off of it.
Wow.
You know, kind of like a dune buggy VW Beetle or something.
That sounds like a lot of fun. Okay, what's going on in the news this week as far as technology, computers, things like that? Does anybody have something to do?
Yes.
Kim's. I'm sorry. Go ahead.
Kim's.
What's Kim's?
Kim's is a music store on 8th Street.
Mondo Kim's. What happened?
They were raided by the New York Police Department.
Really? Raided by the New York Police Department for selling foreign videos?
Allegedly for selling illegally made mix CDs or something.
Really? Mix CDs. This is what the police are spending their time
this
doing.
This is
going
what the
after.
Police are spending their time doing. And so they went and is that are you holding the article?
I'm holding an article.
You're holding an
the
article.
Okay.
This
came from the Village Voice.
Apparently, what the police do is they went in and they told all the customers to get out, and then they made the staff line up and picked like five of them.
Sounds really ominous.
And they arrested the clerks, which seems a little unnecessary to me.
And they did this during business hours.
During business hours.
Boy. Well, you know, we go to Kim's a lot, actually, because they're the only place around that has Region 2 DVDs. You can buy things from Europe and watch videos in a region-free player. And they also have a lot of music as well. So it's really kind of frightening to see something like this happen to a place like that. I mean, you know, if someone is selling something they're not supposed to be selling, isn't there another way to deal with it rather than have cops come in and do something like this?
Well, one of the things about this that I really don't understand is that the police were only interested in hip-hop CDs.
Really?
Or from reports, anyway, which leads me to wonder, is it the case that Kim's is making copies only of hip-hop CDs? That they are actually making illegal copies of those, but only of those? Or is there some, like, bizarre thing where the RIA is focusing on hip-hop, which is, you know, music normally commonly associated with certain sets of people, and I'm wondering if they're targeting that, which is
Well, hip-hop is also a very popular genre at this point in time.
But so are all kinds of genres.
Yeah, there's all kinds of popular bits of music out there. It does seem weird that they would target that specifically. Is it possible that some record company was behind this that specializes in rap music?
I don't know. The whole thing is just very strange.
Here's what they got. They got 500 CDRs, 27 music DVDs, 9 DVD burners, and a scanner. That's according to, and you know who told us this? The RIAA, that's the Recording Industry Association of America. They're the ones who are very proud of this raid. They issued a press release June 9th to applaud the efforts of the NYPD. The well-known back right corner of Kim's ground floor, normally brimming with hip-hop mixtapes, had been raided completely, the section shelves conspicuously empty. 5 employees were arrested, all charged with trademark counterfeiting in the second degree, held at Manhattan Central Booking over the night of June 8th. Kim, do you know the name of the owner of Kim's?
Mr. Kim?
Well, yeah, but his full name is Young Man Kim. Young Man is his first. That's a cool name, I think.
At some point, that will violate truth in advertising laws.
Yeah, Young Man Kim. Anyway, he's made no official statement about the raid, but Brad Buckles, was the executive vice president of anti-piracy of the Recording Industry of America. I don't know why they have this guy giving a quote instead of the other guy. They make it seem like he's going to speak for him. But this guy said the following. The NYPD's steadfast commitment to the fight against piracy. Did you know that they were steadfastly committed in the fight against piracy?
They're steadfastly committed to all kinds of things.
They're steadfastly committed to running red lights. I know that much. They do that all the time.
And, well, they're in such a hurry to stop piracy that they need to run the red lights.
And driving at highway speeds through parks. You know, things like that, without the headlights on.
Well, they need to catch the pirates. It's
yeah, I guess
important.
That's the only way to do it.
Steadfast.
Their steadfast commitment to the fight against piracy has stamped out yet another significant illegal operation. Yeah, Kim's is a significant illegal operation. With actions such as these, New York City law enforcement continues to send a strong message to music pirates that this behavior simply will not be tolerated. Retailers who are making money on the backs of musicians and record companies by selling pirated CDs should know that this is absolutely no way to conduct a business. It might be interesting to point out, too, that Kim's was thanked in the Kill Bill films, apparently because they're such a cool place. I don't think Quentin Tarantino would approve of a place that's a den of piracy, would he? Unless he was writing about it.
Who knows?
So, yeah, that's the latest there. We'll be keeping an eye on that situation, certainly. What else is going on? You heard about this thing at Stanford, right, where people were able to check the website to see if they actually were accepted.
The business school?
Was it the business school? Yeah, the Graduate School of Business. Now, they have rejected 41 applicants who tried to access an admissions website earlier this year in hopes of learning their fate ahead of schedule. School officials said the applicants were given the opportunity to explain why they attempted to gain access to their admissions files before the date when the university was to tell them if they were admitted. At the end of the day, we didn't hear any stories that we thought were compelling enough to counterbalance the act, said Robert Joss, dean of the business school. Admission sites of at least 6 schools were accessed by applicants for about 10 hours in early March after a hacker posted instructions in a Business Week online forum. The instructions told people to log onto their admissions webpage and find their identification numbers in source material that was available on the site. By plugging those numbers into another webpage address, they were directed to a page where their admissions decision would be found. Some applicants saw blank pages, others viewed rejection letters before access was denied. Now, my question is, yes, go right there.
What would a valid explanation be for this?
Curiosity. I mean,
I mean, acceptable to them. What would they accept?
Probably nothing. Well, you know, there is one that I don't think anybody came up with. It wasn't me. I mean, how do you prove that the person who is applying was the person that did it? I mean, anybody could find these names, I assume. Anybody could figure out the ID numbers.
Well, okay.
Tracing IP addresses would do it, but I doubt that Stanford did that. The point is this. It's not a hack. It's not an intrusion into Stanford's site.
No, it's an intrusion. It's having that information out there for anybody to look at.
Exactly. You are minding your own business, perusing Business Week's forums, and all of a sudden you and 5 billion other people get a message saying, hey, Stanford has bad security. If you happen to be a business school applicant, it may apply to you. You can easily go to their site and find out if you've been admitted by doing this.
Mm-hmm.
In other words, that window is open. There is a naked woman in there. You can go look. You're on the sidewalk. Well, okay. I see nothing wrong with that. It may be a little improper, but it's not illegal.
Mm-hmm.
Stanford, I think, had no right to bar these people with the flimsy excuses they gave.
But on the other hand, you say it's not illegal. They're not being charged with a crime. And Stanford does have the right to, you know, reject people if they want to.
Yeah.
So they think these people are dishonest. I question whether or not that's dishonesty and just, let's see if that actually works. Because I know I would do it. I would certainly want to see if they have a blatant security hole like that where you can simply check to see who's accepted or rejected. So, I think it's kind of unrealistic to assume that everybody will read something like that and then just say, well, that would be wrong. I'm not going to even try and see what results from this.
I wonder if anybody decided that they didn't want to go to this school because of their poor security.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I mean, that would be another possibility.
Well, that's how I would counter it. If I was one of the people rejected, I would say, well, I didn't want to go to your stupid school anyway because you have no security at all and you don't treat your students with, or potential students, with any kind of respect by protecting their privacy.
You know, people with attitudes like that don't apply to business school.
Probably not. Right.
Just to reiterate what they could have done, mm-hmm. they could have done two things. They could have, when pressed by Stanford, said that, gee, it wasn't mm-hmm. me. And secondly, if you had done this, it would have been brilliant on your part to do it not only for your ID, which could be obtained from this site, but for 6 or 12 others, because then how would they know it's you? You could say, it wasn't me.
But honestly, did
they just look at my thing?
Would you have expected the school to say, okay, now we're not going to accept you at all because you did this?
You have to think ahead of these idiots.
Well, what about saying, now why did you let other people see my results?
Mm-hmm.
Ooh.
Now, I think anybody who's worth their salt in a business school will already be preparing the paperwork for a lawsuit about, you know. And anybody out there who was rejected because of this, I would advise you to do that.
Yeah, because you could have taken the list of people who were accepted and sent a rejection letter saying, I don't want to go to this school anymore until you got accepted.
Mm-hmm.
Or your admissions to another school or another job could be damaged. Your career could be damaged.
That's
many
true.
Other possibilities that could be worth a lot. Well, yeah.
Yeah, absolutely, absolutely. Speaking of naked people, which I believe, Jim, you mentioned, a woman has sued Yahoo for $3 million, alleging the Internet site failed to fulfill a promise to remove nude pictures of her from the web. That's right. In a lawsuit filed a couple of weeks ago, Cecilia Barnes claims an ex-boyfriend began posting unauthorized personal profiles of her containing the photos in December. The profiles included her email address and work phone number. The former boyfriend also engaged in online discussions in Yahoo chat rooms while posing as Barnes and directing men to the profiles, according to the lawsuit. Due to these profiles and online chats, unknown men would arrive without warning at plaintiff's work, expecting to engage in sexual relations with her. Barnes sent Yahoo a letter in January saying she did not create the profiles and wanted them removed. Additional attempts to get Yahoo to remove them in February and March did not get a response. A Yahoo spokeswoman declined to comment, saying they don't comment on things. Well, my question about this is, how much can you expect Yahoo to do about something like this? I mean, if you see a picture of yourself that's not very flattering or that you just don't approve of, are they really the people to go around deleting everything and playing cop? Or is it something that it should be more user-defined?
If she didn't send them a letter, I would agree with you totally.
Mm-hmm.
But the point is this. She spots all this stuff, probably the hard way, pardon the pun, by people coming to her work and telling her, but we chatted on Yahoo. I saw your naked picture. At that point, she contacts Yahoo. She must have gotten some sort of response, or even if she didn't, at that point, she expects them to be able to take this down.
But, Jim, how does Yahoo even know that she's who she says she is?
She's swearing it. I mean, if Yahoo wanted to respond to it, they could have said, well, okay, come by our offices. Let's see if you look anything like this photo.
I don't think that's how you would run Yahoo, but I don't think that's how Yahoo runs Yahoo.
You know how many hundreds of requests they probably get to ask for deleting accounts and whatever, and if they just approve every one of them.
Yes, they get hundreds of requests to delete an account, but how many of them say, I'm being hounded by horny guys with perverse thoughts? My photo posted by my boyfriend. Here's some good reasons to take it off because it is me and I can prove it. Take it off already.
If you were in Yahoo's position, wouldn't you just have a filter that, you know, just deleted every request for to delete an account?
No.
I mean, think about their position. It'd be very difficult to weed out ones that were true. And
Yahoo's defense may be that they're a carrier.
That's like what I would assume they would say.
But if they responded to this, they're in big trouble. And I think morally, they have the power of moral suasion. Rather, the woman has the power of moral suasion behind her. If this gets to court, she will win, and probably should.
I don't know. I think it would set a bad precedent because anything that for one thing, sometimes people don't want a post of theirs to exist on a Yahoo news group. All right, and they say, I demanded you take that post off. And why should they? If they said something, if something existed. You know, I'm with the whole archive.org mentality. If something happened, then it's happened for all time. You can't just erase it. If there's a picture of you that you don't like, well, you know, that's what the nature of the net is. If you say something that makes you look like an idiot, you can't just unsay it. You know, that's how the net works. And, yeah, you should go after the guy who's harassing you. It sounds like it's pretty easy to find out who that is. But that's where you focus the attention.
Right. It is a crappy position for her to be in, obviously. But because she should be going after her ex-boyfriend.
But the thing is, if I have visited that Yahoo site, I have a picture of her on my computer. So am I liable for something now, too? Is she going to go after me?
Well, it's obviously unrealistic to ask for anything to be taken off the Internet once it gets up there, mm-hmm. because of all these mirrors and everything. But she should be focusing her attention towards her ex-boyfriend.
Yeah,
instead.
Yeah. I'm working on eliminating him somehow. Okay, here's a story that I just saw last week, and I thought it was really kind of cool. I want you to listen carefully, all right? The headline of the story, Text Messages to Stop Kids Wagging. Yeah, I could not make this up.
Is this an American story? Or?
Don't interrupt, Jim.
Oh, okay.
Territory children wagging school are about to be daubed into their parents by mobile telephone text messages.
What is school wagging?
This is either Canadian or Australian.
Well, we have a Canadian here, so is this Canadian?
It's not French-Canadian, that's for sure.
The system will involve sending an SMS to alert parents if their child is not at school and will ask them for an explanation. The territory has the highest rate of truancy in Australia. The messaging system developed by Adelaide company MGM Wireless. Oh, my God. Has been successful in cutting truancy by 50% in other Australian states. Palmerston High School is one of six territory schools considering introducing the phone message software. The SMS system has been reported to be incredibly effective. So I think this is kind of cool, though.
What about the dogs?
I had no idea. No idea what wagging was until I read this story, either.
Will they still be allowed to wag?
I don't know. I'm sure SMS will solve that as well. Bernie, what do you got down there? Anything?
I read about a massive state recall of Texas Instruments calculators, which was triggered by a 12-year-old who figured out that if he pressed two keys at the same time on these state-issued calculators, apparently the state of Virginia issues calculators, a certain model, special model calculators modified for the state that doesn't have fraction to decimal converter. So kids have to figure out on their own. Well, kid figured out how to do it on his own by pressing two keys. And actually, maybe it's the other way around, decimal
Bernie,
fraction.
I think we talked about this before.
Hear this.
Really?
Discussed.
Okay. Well, some of us in the studio seem to think we've heard this, but maybe we talked about it by ourselves. All right.
Well.
Or maybe it was on Off the Wall. That might have been. Okay, it's possible. But okay, it's an interesting story. So the kid figured out basically how to. So he's in jail now, right?
Well, you would think so based on the mentality of governments these days. Mm-hmm. But no, he was actually congratulated. But the state had to recall something like 160,000 calculators. So, and they're going to be replaced by Texas Instruments. I don't know if it's their expense or whose expense, but probably taxpayers' expense. So you can't press two keys to emulate a third key. And what's weird is I remember doing this almost 30 years ago with the original TI-30 calculator. It wasn't their first one, but it's the first TI calculator. Actually, it's the second TI calculator I owned. And it was basically a matrix, a standard keypad matrix, and if you just figured out from the row and column of where the key was that you wanted to press and found out where they intersected and pressed the opposing keys at the end of each row and column at that intersection, you could emulate the third key that you didn't press. In this case, the key was deliberately missing, omitted by the state of Virginia, and the kid figured out, well, if he presses the two keys where those rows and columns intersect, he could convert the number, and which is going to give kids an unfair advantage, according to the state of Virginia. I think that's kind of silly. But in any case, I'd like to know who's going to pay for this whole thing, and I'm glad the kid is not being punished.
Well, who do you think should pay for it?
It's a good question. I think the state should pay for it, but as in any case where the state is at fault, as we've all learned, who gets to pay?
That means we're paying for it if the state pays for it.
Exactly. The people who are actually responsible for the oversight, for missing this easy thing, whether it was Texas Instruments or the state, the state's going to probably end up paying for it. And the people, for instance, if somebody gets arrested without cause by police And, for instance, a shapeshifter's case, got arrested here in Philadelphia, during the RNC, protest about 5 years ago. The city had to pay out a bunch of money, and it was not because, it was not charged to the people who violated his rights, but it was charged to taxpayers.
Mm-hmm.
And that's just, you know, that's just wrong. And that's simply what seems to happen in almost every case where there's government, if not malfeasance, but just incompetence.
Well, have you ever heard of a case anywhere in this country where officials are actually held liable personally for doing things like that?
That's the thing. It just doesn't happen. And that's why things, it's almost encouraging them to continue doing this stuff.
Does that happen in Canada, Fred?
Never heard of such a case.
Uh-huh. So officials there aren't held personally responsible either? No?
Never heard of it.
Okay. Yeah, I think this is a syndrome that you find all throughout the world, and it's unfair, certainly, and we should be fighting it and making people aware of it. I'm afraid that in cases like shapeshifters, people would feel that he's the one that's costing them money if he was to collect a great deal from the police department for abusing his rights. It shouldn't be that way. Obviously, the people who abuse the rights, they should be the ones that feel the public's wrath, not the people who are victimized. Okay, well, that's a very interesting story, and hopefully that kid will stay out of trouble now. Let's take a look at some other things that are going on. First of all, we're getting a bunch of mail, as always. Our email address, oth@2600.com. That's over the electronic internet device thing that's out there. Or you can send us pencil mail, pens, papers, whatever it is you want to send us. You can do that through the magic of the post office. And the address there is Off the Hook, care of WBAI, 120 Wall Street.
10th floor.
That's right. New York, New York.
10005.
Okay. It's good to see you again, Walter.
USA.
All right. And feel free to send us anything that's on your mind. Here's a note that we got from somebody based on last week's show. You guys were talking last week about how soon casinos will be able to take bets from a cell phone as long as you're in Nevada. And, of course, we were also talking about using cell phones on airplanes. Now, this person has merged these together and is asking, will they take your bet if you're calling from a plane flying through Nevada? Well, that's certainly going to open up all kinds of
I don't
trouble.
See why not. Legally, the doctrine is that the territory of a sovereign state, country, whatever you'd like to think of,
mm-hmm.
extends from the center of the earth up through its boundaries, and as far out as it needs to apply.
Yes, but you're not supposed to be talking on a cell phone on an airplane.
Currently.
All right.
but I actually, isn't there an elevation at which they consider you're in, if you're in interstate travel, you're under interstate conveyances, which is usually under federal jurisdiction.
Mm-hmm.
So is there federal law against gambling? Could you not
well,
do it
yes,
anywhere
but,
in the air?
But it may not apply. There may be no specific federal law against gambling in the air. The feds, in other words, tend to let the states handle it, and I would guess that the feds would, if you're directly over Nevada, not mind.
Well, you don't have to pay. You don't. The airlines do not pay tax on liquor that goes between states, so it could be an interesting.
It's
situation.
Not so in the liquor case. It's not where you are. It's the fact that you are starting in one state and ending in another. In the gambling case, it's a question of where you are when you're doing it.
When you press the send key.
Yeah.
All kinds of legal issues and questions that are raised by these hypothetic situations. Now, here's another question. One of the first features I noticed about my new phone was that it had an airplane mode. I remember thinking at the time that I was not allowed to talk on cell phones on airplanes, but I didn't realize how much trouble you could get into until I heard your discussion about it on the show. I have never used the airplane mode, but I presume that it changes the frequency or something so that it won't mess with the plane's controls. My question is, why would a cell phone have an airplane mode in the first place if you're not supposed to use it on an airplane? By the way, it's a VM4500 by Sanyo, and I have Sprint service. Okay, everybody wants to jump on this one. Redbird, you take it.
The airplane modes usually just turn off the transmitter, so you can use all the other functions of the cell phone, and the transmitter will be off.
You can use the camera, you can use the calculator, you can use the calendar, you can use the MP3 player, you can use the... what else do phones do these days besides make calls?
Flashlight.
Flashlight. You know, you're so proud of that flashlight on your phone. It's unbelievable. I just want a phone that makes phone calls. Is that so much to ask?
That mode actually comes in very useful when you're not near any cell towers too, because your cell phone won't be trying to associate itself with a cell phone tower, and it will save you a tremendous amount of battery power.
Mm-hmm. yeah, not using it as a cell phone, I imagine, would. But boy, it's really hard to find a phone these days. It just makes phone calls.
You should see all the crackberry addicts on the airplanes with their Blackberries.
Yeah.
Oh, they're because it has the airplane mode, and they're in there responding to emails, writing emails, and then when they land, they all send.
Mm-hmm. Well, that leads me to something I want to discuss as well, and that, of course, is cell phones. I don't know if you heard what happened to me last week. I got a ticket for talking on my phone while I was driving, and I'm still a little steamed by it, but we got quite a bit of feedback for that. No, it happened. It happened while I was passing a an accident site, and so I was calling a friend, basically updating him on my progress or lack thereof. And bang, right away I was seen and targeted and told to pull over. It took about 10 minutes to pull over safely because of all the traffic that was there. And finally, you know, I got my ticket for endangering traffic by talking on a cell phone. Here's what one reader has to say about this kind of situation. A local cop here in New York City saw me with something in my hand. He pulled me over and wrote me a ticket for cellular phone use. I knew better than to argue at the time. I went to the DMV hearing and questioned the cop as to what cellular brand phone I was using, what company logo, etc. He did not know. I pulled out my ham license and put it on the desk. I then pulled out my transceiver and asked if this could have been what he saw. For good measure, I showed the specific New York State cellular law with its clear language about hooked into the PSTN. So depending on what exactly you were doing and what you said and what the office remembers and is willing to testify to, you may be able to get off from that particular charge. Signed Danny. And actually, he adds, the reason I didn't argue with the cop at the scene was that he'd have rewritten the ticket with the vaguer unsafe driving charge, and that's much harder to get out of. Well, my question from that is, why is it that talking on a ham radio or talking on a CB somehow isn't considered to be distracting, whereas talking on a cell phone is? You know, according to the law, anyway. Does it make any sense?
No.
Okay.
Bernie, do I seem to remember, now my ham radio knowledge is vastly inferior to yours, but aren't ham radio conversations supposed to be much more businesslike than cell phone conversations?
As a matter of fact, the contrary. You're not, well, businesslike is the key phrase. You're not actually permitted to discuss anything business-related over amateur radio frequency. That's a violation of FCC regulations. So you cannot conduct business or play music over ham radio. It's meant for communicating between people, on a non-business basis. But your conversations are maybe a little less casual or more formal than a standard phone conversation because you have to because the nature of the conversation it's half duplex. You have to say over. Or you announce your call sign occasionally, and you
okay.
But
the nature of the conversation really shouldn't dictate whether or not something is distracting because you're able to talk about anything on a cell phone. Is that why that's considered to be more distracting than talking about your ham radio equipment?
I think there's no substantial difference between a ham radio conversation in half duplex and a cell phone conversation in full duplex from a distraction standpoint. You'd be just as distracted with one as the other, I think.
So would you say that you could be just as distracted by operating a CB while you're driving, which is what they're designed for? People hold them with one hand, and they talk into the microphone. Why is there not a law against that, but holding something up to your ear or even having it next to your ear and holding it with your shoulder, that somehow is more distracting? I just don't follow the logic.
Very good point. It's not logical at all.
Because the police would then not be able to use their multi-million-dollar radio systems in their cars.
Okay.
But I do have to say that both of the speeding tickets I've ever gotten, I was talking on the radio.
Okay, but you got a ticket for speeding.
Yeah, well, that was because I wasn't paying attention to the speed sign because I was talking on the radio.
Well, you know, there's all kinds of things that can distract you. A conversation in the car can make you go fast. You don't outlaw the conversation. You outlaw the dangerous behavior. So if somebody is driving erratically, you know, you can blame it on whatever, but you charge them with driving erratically. Or not paying attention or something. But we got a lot of feedback about this. I want to read a couple of letters. Dear Off the Hook, I love the show. I've been listening for years, first in New York, then in the Bay Area, then in Vancouver, Canada, and now in London. Apparently this guy's on the run from something. I keep meaning to write about something or other. I'm always cheering you on. But I had to take issue with Emmanuel on last week's driving while on a cell phone debate. I think Emmanuel said that he'd been ticketed that afternoon, so I can understand that he was bummed about it. Yes, thank you. Even so, I think the cell phone ban is a great idea. When I lived in New York, I used to drive from Manhattan to New Jersey every week. I'd often see fender benders on the approach to the Holland Tunnel, invariably involving people who were distracted by cell phone use. Well, first of all, I'd like to know how you know that. Did you see them happen, or did you see them talking on the cell phone afterwards when they were trying to call somebody to say they weren't coming or something? Anyway, I also saw a low-speed pileup happen in the lane right next to me when driving south of San Francisco. The traffic had been stop-start, someone had fired up their cell phone, and then they'd screwed up their braking when the traffic ahead of them slowed down. So from my very unscientific experiences on two coasts, I'd say that low-speed cell phone use can easily lead to accidents. What's more, as the phone companies cram more and more services into phones, which require users to be increasingly fleet-fingered with their phone keys, it's going to be much easier to get distracted when you're using the phone in a car. People aren't only talking, they're looking through their calendars, choosing MP3s, downloading ringtones, and Lord knows what else. Is that part of the law? Can you play your MP3 player and look through your calendar? Can you do that? Is that illegal? It's just talking on the phone.
I would think that would fall under distracted driving.
Yeah, I would too. I agree that it makes sense to ban other devices and to target Big Macs in particular. Full disclosure, I usually listen to the show on my iPod via a mini FM transmitter while I drive to work in Vancouver, and I constantly worry that I'm going to crash the car when I find myself switching tracks or rewinding to catch Bernie's last sardonic remark.
That's legal in Canada, driving with headphones.
That's legal.
With Walkman, you can't
drive. No, you can't do that here either.
Okay, so I don't understand why it's legal to have a headset, you know, for these hands-free devices. To me, it seems extremely dangerous. If something happens, right, if I'm talking on a cell phone and something happens that requires me to move very quickly, I drop the cell phone and move very quickly. This way, if someone is talking into my ear, how do I get them to stop talking to my ear so I can make that quick maneuver?
I don't agree with that. You're not restricted in movement by the earpiece. I really think that having an earpiece is much safer than having
If somebody is yelling into your ear and something dangerous is happening right in front of you that requires 100% of your attention, if I'm on my phone, I can just simply release the phone, it falls to the ground, and I can devote 100% of my attention to what's going on in front of me. Now, if I have somebody in my ear, I either have to figure out a way to turn it off, or I have to yank it out of my ear first.
That adds a step. You can very easily pull it out of your ear if you feel so inclined, but it's not restricting your movement or anything like that.
But it sounds to me like you're adding another step where you have to pull
something
out.
If you don't feel like you're able to do this, then don't do it.
Well, that's why I don't want to do it. I don't want to have something attached to my ear. I just want to have something in my hand that I can drop at a moment's notice.
I don't disagree with this listener either, because there's been many situations where I'm on the road and people are very distracted while driving with their cell phone, and it's very obvious. Like, you know, a majority of the people who do very stupid things on the road.
I'm not denying that there are people who cannot handle the most simple things on the road. Driving is one of them.
Can't you just ask the person to shut up that you're talking to? You don't have to like take them out of your ear to stop.
If you're driving around, particularly in the New York area, things happen very fast. There's no time to say, you know, I'm about to get into an accident. Could you please hold on? You can't do that. You can't. You have to act immediately. Now, I've never had a problem with this. The only problems I've had is trying to hide talking on a cell phone so that a cop doesn't see me. That's a dangerous situation.
I feel like if something was about to happen very quickly, you'd probably yell an expletive, and that would shut them up.
No, believe me, it doesn't.
You know, this whole thing makes me glad I live in a state that doesn't have this law.
Uh-huh.
Anyway, so...
Yeah.
I'm in one of the few states that's left.
All right. Anyway, I want to thank Nick for writing in with that letter. We have one other on this subject. Emmanuel, this is in regards to your rant about cell phones on the road and your $90 phone call. Think of it this way. You broke the law, but your argument is that you are not endangering anyone by talking on your phone because you are moving slowly. If I follow that logic, it would be okay for people to run red lights as long as no one else was at the intersection. Well, actually, you know what? Now that you said that, I think it does make sense. First of all, cops do that all the time, and sometimes they roll through dangerously, and I think that's wrong. But there are many places, particularly in Europe, where when there's nobody around, when it's late at night, traffic lights aren't real traffic lights. They turn into flashers, or you don't have a left turn signal, and you basically say, okay, when it's safe, you go. Here in this country, a light can stay red for, say, 5 minutes at a time with nobody around, and you would not even think of going through that light because it's the law, and even though there's 0% chance of anyone being there, you don't break the law. So I think it's kind of silly. I wouldn't do it, but I think it's kind of silly to have all these restrictions for no real reason. Anyway, using a cell phone, watching DVDs, or eating while driving could be deemed dangerous for two reasons. It handicaps the use of one of your arms, which is a serious issue when the driver must shift gears and steer at the same time. And the other reason is it takes your attention off the road. The latter obviously applies more to phones and DVDs than food, but listening to radio may also qualify as an attention distraction. The reason radio is not deemed dangerous is the same reason that hands-free phone devices are illegal. With that in mind, one must conclude that attention is not the issue, but rather the inability to use one of your hands because it is occupied by a device or food. The reason cell phones are illegal and CB radio is not is because you don't have to hold the CB to your ear to use it like a phone. And since you only use the mic to talk, it is assumed that a person would not talk while driving. It demanded your full attention. I don't accept that. You have to hold the microphone to talk. And
yeah, but you could technically shift gears with the microphone still in your hands.
Yeah, but it seems like there's all kinds of wires involved there. You could get all tangled up.
Yeah, but they got these handy, like, telephone wires that, you know...
It's much less complicated than you're making it seem to be.
Well, I'm capable of holding a phone to my ear without actually having to put my hand there. I can do that. But you know what else? I can also drive with my hand on my ear. I do that sometimes because I steer with my right hand and I lean into my head... into my hand with my head. Now, is that illegal?
And
I'm doing the same thing.
And when you shift gears, what do you do with the phone?
What I do with the phone? When I shift gears, I shift gears with my right hand.
With the phone in your hand?
But I don't shift gears when I'm talking on the phone. There's no reason to do that because that's obviously going slow speed there. If you're on a highway and you're just going at the same speed, there's nothing dangerous involved.
Then city traffic, then you're constantly shifting gears, and what do you do with the phone? It becomes a problem, and you can easily see how it's very easy for people to get distracted. And
I agree. It can become a problem, but I think it's based on your driving ability, and some people can handle it, and they're driving unsafely, and they should not be doing that, and they should know better.
I have more of a problem with the seatbelt laws than with the cell phone laws, because cell phone laws actually endanger other people if you're distracted on the road, and seatbelt laws, it's like the Darwinism thing. If you're not wearing your seatbelt and you get into a car accident, it's common sense to put it on. But
I have a problem with the laws that permit motor vehicles in New York City, but let's move on.
All right. Thanks, Null Data, for that letter. Also, there's an interesting article which came out, apparently as a result of my experience on CNN, about whether or not hands-free phones are safer. Yeah, this came out last week, June 9th. The use of electronic devices such as cell phones, including hands-free, precipitated many crashes and near misses, according to a report issued Thursday, the day after I got my ticket. Using a cell phone behind the wheel is a key cause of traffic accidents, and hands-free devices provide little safety benefit, according to the Detroit News. And
who sponsored the survey?
National Highway Traffic Safety Administration researchers.
Hmm.
Yeah. And they said devices like headsets or voice-activated dialing led to longer dialing times than for handheld phones. The delays offset the potential benefit of keeping both hands on the wheel. So the research adds to a growing body of studies that suggest hands-free cell phone systems do not deliver the safety benefits automakers and legislators had thought because they don't know what they're talking about in the first place.
Red Hawk. I have a theory.
Oh, what's your theory, Bernie?
My theory is the cellular telephone industry is one of the most powerful lobbies in Washington, and the CTIA, the Cellular Telecommunications Industry Association,
mm-hmm.
Lobbied successfully to get things like the Electronic Communications Privacy Act passed back in '86 to make it a crime just to listen to radio frequencies that happened to have been usurped by their industry. Which used to be TV channels. But what I'm getting at is I believe that the safety issues that were raised to legislators were probably embraced, and proposals were made. I'm just theorizing. The proposals were made to pass legislation to just say you can't use a cell phone in a car. And I'm sure the cellular industry had real problem with that because they wanted to rake in all that money on airtime. And they got this compromise that a hands-free option would solve this whole problem.
Well, you know,
compromise was made, and that's what I think happened.
It also gave them the opportunity to sell a new device, namely hands-free devices, which everyone is forced to buy.
Speaking of telephones, I had an experience today that you might find interesting.
Go ahead.
I received some spit today. Spam via IP telephony.
Oh, no.
We have an IP phone.
Did you just make up that phrase? Or
no.
Okay.
We have an IP phone in my office, and it's not, it doesn't have an external number. and it rang today, and I picked it up, and I started hearing a recording of someone saying, "You've just won a free." It was like one of these emails. You've just won a free vacation to redeem it, this, that, and the other. And it was, I want to know how prevalent this is. I mean, how many IP phones are there? And
but why should they be exempt? You know?
Yeah. Well, I know, but it was amazing because it's just like. Mm-hmm. Phone rang, and it was some spam. But
was it the first phone call you actually got on that phone?
Yeah.
Probably.
What service is it through, or what?
It was a Cisco SIT phone.
It's like an... Okay.
Yeah.
It's not subscribed to something like...
Right,
Vonage.
No, it's not like a... No, no, not a...
Sorry. So it's not subscribed to Vonage,
right,
or anything like that.
Right.
We're going to take phone calls, 212-209-2900, but I would like to do a very quick round-the-room survey of some cell phone etiquette issues, because this has come up quite a few times. It comes up when we're hanging out socially outside the show as well. And I just want to, maybe for the record, just lay it to rest. What's acceptable, what is not acceptable in using cell phones? And maybe we can decide this for the rest of the world as well, okay? Now, there seems to be a sentiment that using cell phones in restaurants is not a good idea. Now, does anybody have any input to that? Is it ever okay?
No.
It's never okay to use a cell phone in a restaurant?
No.
What if you talk quietly? Even if you're talking quietly?
It's rude.
Mm-hmm. It's rude. What if you're by yourself?
If you're by yourself, I don't have as much of a problem with it, but I often sit with people who are you know, eating together, and they talk on their cell phone, and it's just like, what the hell?
Well, yeah, I know. If you're with somebody, it's annoying. But if you get a phone call, what should you do in a restaurant?
I would step outside.
Step outside? Okay. Any disagreements to this? No? No, no opinions at all. Arseny.
Well, if you're not part of the conversation in the first place and you get a call, you can quietly scoot in the back and sort of whisper into your phone.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's the thing. If there's a conversation going on, you get, I mean, it's your own conversation. So I could see if you can talk without being disruptive. How is it any different than having a conversation in a restaurant with people and being loud and boisterous?
Well, I mean... To answer your question, it's very similar because you're being loud and boisterous.
Mm-hmm.
But there's also this strange priority we seem to put on cell phone calls when we get them. Like, we're in the middle of a conversation, we have to stop to answer our phone. And I don't even say, I'm sorry, I'm going to take this, or rather, mm-hmm. Just not take it at all. And mm-hmm. I think we should be doing that more often.
Well, it's because the person in front of you is there, and they're not leaving. Well, unless you offend them.
They will. Believe me, they will.
There's also this mentality people around here have that that screaming into the phone improves the reception.
Now, you see, that to me, I see that so much more in this country than in other places. Other places, like, for instance, Berlin and the subway, people are talking on their cell phones, and they're not yelling. They're talking quietly. You can't even tell they're on the cell phones a lot of the times. I know that's probably going to change, and I know people probably talk louder, but... Talking on a cell phone doesn't have to be obnoxious.
No, it doesn't have to be, no, but you hear people all the time, hey, can you hear me? Okay, mm-hmm. Can you hear me now? Okay, I'll talk like this, and then maybe...
Well, that's because the service sucks, and we got to do something about that. Okay, now, how about if you're using public transportation, if you're on a bus, is it acceptable to use a cell phone then?
Arsenal. I actually have a story. I was on the bus on Monday, and the bus driver was complaining to a passenger... he told him to please move to the back because he was talking very loud. And the man was talking very loud.
On a cell phone.
Okay. And the man started screaming, so the bus got quiet. And that's how I heard how he was screaming at the bus driver to tell him that he paid his fare, that he's been riding forever and no one's ever said anything to him.
Uh-huh.
But
what was the person on the phone doing?
That was the person on
the
phone.
No, the person who he's talking to on the phone.
I don't know.
Because that's very rude to...
Right, right. But the other thing I noticed is that there was a conversation between two women, I think, that was louder than the man on the phone, and they were sitting very close.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't know.
Yeah, it just seems to me that, you know, you're discouraged from using cell phones on a bus, in restaurants, in your car, probably in your home. You know, so you have to wonder. How about on the street? How about when you're walking down the street? I see people using cell phones all the time, and it's... There's something about it that annoys me. But they're on the street. They're walking down the street, and they're talking to somebody, and you just sort of want to mock them and make fun of them because they're having this animated conversation. But
I actually think that's a good thing, because now people who talk to themselves, you know, don't stand out as much.
That's certainly true.
But
that's,
you know, they're true. Really talking to somebody on the phone?
No.
Are they just acting like they're talking to somebody on the phone?
You don't know. You can't tell the difference. You can't tell.
There's a restaurant. Go ahead, Bernie.
Oh, back in the early days of cell phones, I remember people would actually... when it was having a cell phone in your car was a novelty back in like 85, 86, some people would actually pretend to be using their cell phone just mm-hmm. so the person next to them would see, in the car next to them would see, talking on his cell phone and just to get that status rush. But on the subject of handsets, I think it's really ironic that Bell Laboratories spent millions and millions of dollars researching the ergonomics of telephone usage, trying to figure out how to get people to use the proper volume level speaking into the handset.
Mm-hmm.
They're not shouting or they're not too quiet. And that whole thing came out, as we know, is called side tone, where a certain amount of your voice is sampled and goes through, not sampled, but amplified and sent through the earpiece. You can basically hear yourself talking. You notice this on a landline phone. You can hear yourself. Try taking the earpiece away from your ear while you're talking on a landline phone, and you'll suddenly realize that it's a cell phone. You can't really hear yourself anymore.
Mm-hmm.
So I blame the cell phone manufacturers and maybe the carriers for not implementing side tone properly. And maybe it's an environmental thing, too, because people use cell phones in noisier areas than they would a landline phone, too.
Well, one thing I think we can all agree on is that the quality of phone calls has gone way downhill since cell phones were introduced. I want to take some phone calls, but one final question really quick. Ringers. Keep ringers on, keep ringers off. Which do you go with?
Vibrate clip to your belt.
Nobody Vibrate clip to your belt.
Doesn't disturb anyone.
Okay.
Certainly do not pick your ringtone in a restaurant.
Oh, my God. Or a movie theater in the middle of the movie.
Yes, do not play
or show off your ringtone, you know?
I think I like the ones where it vibrates and then it rings, because sometimes if there's things in your pocket, you can't feel it in the
mm-hmm.
ringtone.
Well, I like the kind that vibrate, and then if you don't respond, it sends like a little stab of electricity through you. Those are good.
That's always good.
Yeah, those are good because, you know, sometimes you do need to get that call.
Have you ever seen any of the restaurants that have the signs that say no cell phone?
Oh, yeah.
There's one that I go into, a barbecue restaurant, and they say you can... You're allowed to use your phone, but in every phone call, you must mention Old South Barbecue.
All right, let's take some phone calls. 212-209-2900. Good evening. You're on the air.
Good evening.
Speak up, please.
I was just calling. It's kind of off topic. About, I'm kind of nervous.
It's okay. Just speak up.
Okay. I was calling. I had cable, and I got rid of it, and I went to get a satellite, but the building doesn't allow it.
Uh-huh.
So I was wondering, is that because they made a contract with, let's say, Time Warner, because I live in Manhattan, or is that just to...
Well, there could be a couple of reasons. First of all, you have to have a view of the southern sky. Do you have that view?
No, I'm in the back apartment.
Okay, so it probably wouldn't even matter, because you can't get it anyway. I do know for condominiums and various communities that it's Supreme Court ruling has said that they cannot forbid you from getting a satellite dish. I'm not sure if that applies for an apartment building. And by satellite dish, I mean an 18-inch dish, not a 6-foot dish.
It does apply.
It does apply to apartment buildings, too.
As long as a dish
is located in an area that you have your own use to, like if you have a balcony, for instance,
mm-hmm.
You can put a satellite antenna on your balcony if it's under that size limit, according to the FCC and the Supreme Court.
It's a standard dish, not the big dish, a little small.
But
yeah.
Would you be putting it on your own balcony?
I guess they would have to put it in the... Well, I don't know how, if they mount it or they screw it in.
Uh-huh. But, I mean, if you don't have a view of the southern sky, then you can't do it anyway.
Right,
because the signal wouldn't go through.
No, you have to have a view. And I always thought that's something that was really kind of unfortunate about companies like DirecTV and Dish. I don't think they have any plan for those people that can't get a view of the southern sky, because there are certainly a lot of them. But the satellites have to be in geostationary orbit over the equator.
Okay, so I could get it outside my window if I had a view, but they won't let enough, but I wouldn't be able to put it on the roof, I guess.
No, that's something they probably could stop you from doing. But if you have some neighbors across the hall that do have a view of the southern sky, maybe you can work something out with them. Anyway, thanks for that call.
It's also, depending on where you live, there may be historic building preservation regulations preventing anything from changing the facade of the building.
That's always a possibility. And good evening. You're on the air. Go ahead.
Yeah. Oh, hi. Sorry.
Hi. Speak up, please.
I'm at the later. Oh, it's okay. Can you hear me now?
Yes, go ahead.
Okay, great. Sorry, I had to use that line. This is off topic, but I just wanted to know, am I the last person in the world to learn that you can't take pictures out the window of an airplane as it's flying?
No, because I think we're the first to hear that.
Okay.
I'd never heard that one before. You can't take pictures out of an airplane while it's flying. Who told you this?
I was recently flying from California, and I'd never been out west before, and I was flying across the west and seeing Lake Tahoe and mountains, and I'm snapping pictures away, and one of the stewardesses says, oh, since 9/11, they don't want you to take pictures out the window anymore.
What airline is this?
This was, what's it called? AirTran, one of the chief budget guys.
Okay, well, apparently they're not doing very much training either in the people they hire. No, there's no truth to that whatsoever. Unless your snapping of pictures is somehow creating a nuisance, like you're flashing all over the place or making all kinds of noise or leaning over people, you know, I don't see any reason whatsoever for that.
Well, I mean, the only thing I could see is that they're concerned that somebody might see, oh, here's a good site to set up like a surface-to-air missile or something. This is where the airplane's flying.
Yeah, that's the way you're going to do it, by taking pictures out of an airplane. I'm sorry, I don't buy it. You know, there's so many places you can take pictures from. That's just the silliest thing ever. Anyway, thanks so much for that. Let's try to squeeze in one last call. And let's go all the way over here for that. And good evening. You're on the air.
I'm on the air?
Yes, go ahead. Quickly.
Hi. Okay, I've got a couple of comments for you. Number one, the smart car you guys were talking about.
Mm-hmm.
We have a casino right by us here in Detroit, over the water at Windsor, and they are doing some sort of thing right now where they are apparently giving smart cars away or something like that. And I heard that on an advertisement yesterday, I think it was.
They're doing this in Canada, or they're doing this in the United States?
They're doing this in Canada, but a lot of people from Detroit are going over there all the time, gambling over there, so...
That's
I'm not sure how they'd handle, if a U.S. person were to go over there and get all that. Got a question for you guys.
You got to make it very quick. We have 10 seconds left.
Okay, 10 seconds. Question is, I've got some great pictures of you guys at Dayton.
Uh-oh.
Good to see you guys there. I'm wondering if there was anybody who was at Dayton in your crew there that would mind me putting those on a website.
I don't think I did anything too embarrassing this year, but, if they're clean, yeah, go ahead and post them. Bernie, any objections?
No, but at least send us the address where we can look at them.
Yeah, we'd like to see them, too.
And we'll announce it next week.
We always like to know what we look like to cameras.
All right, we will. I will email you that to your TH address.
OTH@2600.com. Thanks so much for the input and for taking pictures and things like that. Fred, I want to thank you very much for coming down from Montreal and for bringing that little smart car with you.
Merci.
And it's going to be in the city for some time. We'll be driving around the East Hills a little later on, so feel free to run outside and wave at it and things like that. We'll be back again next week with another action-packed edition of Off the Hook. Till then, Emmanuel Goldstein for everybody. Have a good night. Oh, and by the way, we're going out with some Canadian music, right? What is this?
That's right. This is a singer from Montreal called Jean Leloup, and this is a title piece from his album Le Dôme.
All right. See you next week.